Hi, friends. The world got you down? Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made.
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscovered Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
Hey everybody, I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer slash the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can check out our website at weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality. Welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, we are talking about Invasion of the Saucer Men from 1957. Who could have possibly picked this one? I have no clue. Maybe Brian. No, it was me. I picked Invasion of the Saucer People. And before I talk about why and how I've even heard of this movie, I am very sure that this was both of your first watches. So how'd you guys like Invasion of the Saucer People? All 72 minutes of it.
I love the length of time.
So in 2016, Say Anything released an album called I Don't Think It Is. And I love the vibe and I love the direction and I love Say Anything, but the album sucked. And I just refused to admit that it sucked because I wanted it to be good because it just fit with my personality trait that I was trying to create for myself. And I'm convinced that that is you and all of 1950 sci-fi movies.
It might not be too far from the truth. I do love the aesthetic more than I like a lot of the films. But I actually think that Invasion of the Saucer Men, I mean, it's a lot of mistakes, all right? There's a lot of mistakes that were made in the making of this movie. Apparently, it started as a serious film, and then like midway through production, they were like, fuck it, let's just try to make it a comedy. All in all, I think it's an all right movie.
I am excited because when we get to the end, I'm going to guess Scott's double feature before he says it because I'm actually fairly confident I know what it is for once.
I mean, it might also be mine because I get to go first on that, but we'll see. Movie kicks off with some sweet 1950s greaser voiceover, though, so already in a good mood as soon as you
hit play. It's narrated by fucking Duke.
Yeah, for sure. Thick Jersey accent. So my experience with this movie is that a good friend of mine who comments quite a bit on the Facebook page, Lauren Longbottom, right around the end of college or maybe shortly after I graduated college, she texted me one time and was like, I just bought this movie. It's my dad's favorite film and I feel like it'd be up your alley. Do you want to hang out and watch it? So I went over and we watched Invasion of the Saucer Men and she's like, it's so bad. And her dad is like 100% just like 50-year-old me. Because every time I see him, he's just talking to me about Svengoli who's like a late night horror host. When he heard that we did an episode of The Deadly Mantis, he was like, oh, what a classic. He's like, what about Tarantula? Are you going to do one on Tarantula? And I was like, maybe. He's a diehard Invasion of the Saucer Men fan. And yeah, is this one that I'm always going to pop in? Not really. Maybe once in a while. But I think that it does capture the best of the bad of 1950s movies like this. You've got like Makeout Point and the teenage kids, and like half the movie's just about like, man, these adults, they just don't listen to us kids and we're in the know. And that's like kind of the vibe of it. But it's just ridiculous. The whole movie's ridiculous. The actual design of the saucer men has kind of become like an iconic look. Like,
yeah,
they utilize it in Futurama now as like the head news anchor is based on Invasion of the Saucer People
oh,
on the
yeah.
show Futurama.
Okay, yeah. Like, yeah, so, I was like, why the... I assumed that the design was ubiquitous now, and I just didn't know how fresh it was in 57. But that news anchor, that makes absolute perfect sense. You know, and also I thought that the saucer itself was pretty dank. Like, it looked good.
Yeah.
And I really thought that this was... I know this is going to sound weird for a black and white movie, but this was kind of like a gory 50s movie because... It seemed like there was gore happening.
There was a lot of implied gore,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I really, I mean, I think it's not, this movie's not half bad. You know, I think I liked it better than the Giant Mantis. Giant Mantis, was it?
Deadly Mantis.
Deadly Mantis. Yeah, see how much I like that movie.
They're all the same movie.
I didn't hate that movie, and I don't hate any of these movies. I think that they're about ambiance. And so when we have to do a show for the ha-has, you know, on a 1950s movie, it's like, guys, this is kind of inappropriate, you know? Like, it's the amount of sexist comments in the first 5 minutes of this movie is just impressive.
But then you're like, oh, those weren't so bad when you get, like, more into it, and like there's just a whole scene where it's like, did you fill up with gas? And she's like, I don't know what gas is. And it's like, of course a dumb broad doesn't know what gas is.
But it's also so funny because, yeah, they infantilize the women in this, but then also the women are all the women that are at like Makeout Point are like, hey, cut those lights, you're cramping our style, you know? Like, they all want to drink and they all want to fuck, you know? And I'm like,
they're all growing up
you.
To be Marge Simpson's sisters. Like, that's just the direction they're heading.
I do like the one scene. There's this stupid motif throughout the entire movie that Makeout Point is right next to a guy's farm.
It's on a guy's farm.
And the kid's like getting his cows drunk.
Yeah, but also think about how much that bull would have had to drink to get drunk off of that shitty like 3-2 beer that they probably had in 1957. It's not like... You know, I don't think that they had, you know, Imperial IPAs in 1957, you know? Like, there weren't, like, 9% beers.
There's that scene early on where the bull scares our female lead.
Yeah.
And she screams. And then you hear one of the girls in the car go, take it easy, Bobby boy. And then one of the guys goes, go, man, go. It's like, just captures 1957 in such a beautiful time.
And, you know, the only thing that could have been better is if they had enough money so that after the guy goes, go, man, go, somebody says, but just don't step on my blue suede shoes.
I will. So throwing compliments, like you said, like the UFO doesn't look bad. I actually think that, like, the disembodied hand underneath the car crawling to the tire with the fingers coming out.
But they use it
so
much.
For how low budget this movie clearly is, it's a pretty effective prop.
And I love that it's got the, like, the prop is cool because they put little lines beneath of like little tubes underneath each one of the claws so that the claws would drip the water, like the what you thought was some sort of like poison, but at the end of the day you find, or at the end of the night,
alcohol.
It's alcohol. And the best part is that the only guy that dies, the only person that dies, if I remember correctly, is he only dies because he's already drunk when he gets attacked
by the
saucer men.
He dies of alcohol poisoning.
Yeah, and the
which, credit where credit's due, right? Which this movie doesn't deserve that much credit, but
are we giving it too much?
The idea that, like, first of all, I love that the aliens are framing this kid. So, like, he's like, they're beating up the car. They must think it's because the car, like, killed their friend. And then they later find out
this guy really hates cans.
But then they find out that it's like, no, the aliens killed a dude. And we're like, shit, we got to cover up the tracks. Let's make this kid's car look like it was a hit and run. I love the plot point of, like, theoretically, yeah, you know what? Like, if aliens were coming and visiting Earth, having the ability to make any person who meets them seem like a drunk is a really good method of covering your tracks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Brian's sold on this.
No, I just agree. I just also think, you know, that they choose who gets to see them, like rednecks.
Wait, like what? Like a redneck?
Yeah, like that's who they allow to see them, is people that would... unreliable narrators are the only people that seem to find aliens.
For some reason, I was like, is that some sort of conspiracy theory term? Oh, this is because it's coming from Brian. Or is that a cryptozoological creature that I don't know yet? But then I realized he's just talking about rednecks. I'm like, I know that cryptozoological creature. I grew up around about 20,000 of them.
Oh my God. We were out camping and we were making out. And then I remember seeing those big white eyes, black eyes, like a dog's eyes. And I remember him saying to me, go on, get.
It's so funny because Scott thought that a redneck was a cryptozoological creature. Man, I fucked up that one.
You sound like you just got poked by the saucer.
They got
man.
Me, Scott.
I watched your tongue trip.
Well, I'm not cutting this, but...
Chris, that was worth the money to watch his tongue actually roll over on itself.
So Scott thought that a redneck was some type of monster in cryptozoology, but actually they're just cryptozoologists. That's the joke that I was trying to get to.
I don't know if it would have been better if you would have gotten to it.
It was good when the stupid tongue got in the way. Speaking of the farmer who I guess would fall into the redneck category a little bit, I love him calling the cops and he's just like, get them smooching kids off my property.
I couldn't remember if that, I have that as a note and all in caps, and I couldn't remember if that was a bit for me or if that was actually a quote.
That is a quote.
But I know for sure that this is a line and not a bit. Why don't you tell me how to get the first base with you tonight? And she's just like real fresh, you know. I'm just like, I love how women in these movies were just, they had to pretend like sexual harassment was just cute. You know, the same shit happened in Deadly Mantis. It's just like, ha, 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 women are just objects. They have no motivations of their own.
That's pretty much every woman in a 50s horror movie
for the
most part.
Pretty much every woman forever because, you know, like, dudes that have the thought process of, like, this might work, you know, with their bullshit lines. There's just a line, far as the eye can see, behind every 4 to 10 out of 10, you know?
The only reason I'll never get in trouble is because I could never really get them down right. Like, I'd go to Hooters, I'd be like, I'll have the chicken breast, hold the breast. And they're like, huh? And I'm like, just chicken fingers, please.
The best part is that everyone knows that this is Brian in his head trying to romanticize how awkward he is, when in reality he's so awkward that he if he even finds himself in a Hooters, he would look at the floor and be like, chicken fingers please, and then that's it, you know. And he wouldn't do anything else, and he'd drink his fucking water or Coke or whatever the hell.
I don't know if Scott or Brian has had to experience this, but I've had the experience of having a boss take me to Hooters business trip. And oof, that
we went every Friday at work. But this was like 2 years ago when like they literally were wearing like turtlenecks.
Yeah, no, this was
average wings.
So my manager would like be in town like once every few months, and he would hit me up every single time he was in town. He's like, hey, you know where the Hooters is around here? Let's meet up and talk. And he would just go over the numbers and flirt with whatever poor girl was set as the waitress. And I'd just sit there awkwardly. And I know that on at least one occasion, when he got up to pay the bill, I apologized to the waitress because I felt so uncomfortable being there by association. Like,
you know,
it's like,
yeah, but the best part about that is that I got real fucking nervous when you were getting to the end of that story, because you said, and I watched my boss get up from the table, and I was like, oh God, was he visibly bone aroused? You know, it's like, yeah. Now that yeah.
And
is...
And the salt and pepper and everything just fell off the table as he turned. It was insane.
It was literally like that scene in Basketball when there's...
I want to talk about my favorite character in this movie real quick, which is Artie, the roommate, who... shows absolutely not a single second of sadness when he's told that his longtime friend and roommate has been killed.
They're con artists together. He doesn't give a fuck. No honor among thieves.
Listen, Scott, if someone called me and said, hey, something terrible's happened to Scott, like, I consider us con artists in a way, but I'd still be heartbroken.
I don't consider us con artists.
Explain the con artist.
Like, well, Matt,
go to cons, and we're an artist.
Matt, you are so full of terrible jokes today. Like, this is going to be a 10-minute episode unless you are an absolute moron.
I know it's good for the show, and it's that it all stays every second of it.
Oh, Christ.
I mean, I think that the creatures, like I said, I think that the aliens look really cool. I think it's a good quick view.
They're just what I want. They're exactly what I want. I'll say that.
This was easier than Deadly Mantis for me to finish. I mean, just personally, I think that they're similar lengths, but like...
There was less science in it.
Yeah, like, there was nobody...
Deadly Mantis...
You're exactly right. There wasn't the scene where they're like, well, I am a scientist, and this is what it means with this.
Here's the thing, because this is like a low-budget 50s movie completely designed for drive-in audiences, right?
Mm-hmm.
But... they actually do something that I think is kind of interesting is, like, they're juggling essentially four different character storylines. Maybe even five, I guess you could argue, with the farmer. But, like, you've got the farmer and he's got his own storyline. You've got the military that's, like, trying to do something with the spaceship.
Spaceship, can you hear us? Answer me.
You've got the detective... who's just terrible at his job.
Time for the third degree, huh?
You've got all of the teenagers at Makeout Point plotline, and then you've got the two con artists plotline. Like, there's all these moving pieces, and they're all, like, pretty well fleshed out. Like, I feel like with all the main characters, none of them were just, like, generic character A, B, C, or D. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, the con artist guy. His storyline was this was happening or whatever. We do have to talk about the cop who ultimately the resolution of this is completely insane because no one else besides the teenagers learns of the existence of these aliens, excluding Artie. These two kids get off the hook with the dead body just because he had alcohol poisoning in the coroner report. And the cop's basically just like, oh, you hit him. He was just already dead. So charges are
which dropped. I don't think you could figure that out that quickly in 1950. I don't know.
No, I don't think so either.
I like how that's where your suspension of disbelief breaks and not the, you know, the aliens with booze syringes in their fingernails.
Who get the bull drunk?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what their fucking plan was.
Party, dude.
Yeah, it was like Space Invaders. They just came to hang out for a little bit.
Hi, friends. The world got you down. Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made.
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscover Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
All right, Matt. I think that we're at the point where you need to tell us what your double feature would be.
So, I've got one that I'm going to hold off. It's literally only there because it was the actual double feature when this played at the drive-in because I wanted to find out what that was. I don't think anyone's going to pick it, so I'm going to tell you guys afterwards. But the actual movie, the whole time I was watching this, I was like, yo, this is the plot to Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Like, bunch of teenagers at Makeout Point. They see an alien. There's a farmer walking around. There's cops that don't believe anything that's happening around them. It's Killer Clowns from Outer Space. They ripped off this movie. Chiodos Brothers, bunch of hacks.
Didn't you just meet them 2 weeks ago?
I never met him. I just threw him a few free shirts. I said, hey, here's some shirts with your critters on them.
Oh, boy.
Brian, why don't you go next? You can have mine.
Yeah, I don't even know if I'm correct in it, but I'll take what I think is Scott's, which is Idle Hands, because of that scene in the car where the hand is crawling up the car. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, it almost seems like shot for shot just from like when it was like cutting to them in the car and the hand crawling and cutting to them. And I'm just like, this alien's going to grab a boob, isn't he?
That's some lateral thinking, and I appreciate that, Brian. But I am going to go with The Blob 1988, because a true horror fan would say, I'm going to double feature Invasion of the Saucer Men with The Blob, the original Blob, which was, is that 53? Matt, you would know better than me, right?
I think so. For someone who lives so close to Blobfest, I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, anyway, in any case, the original Blob would be a true horror fan's double feature, but I am I'm a poser, even though I've been doing this show for a long time, and I would go with 1988's The Blob, because that movie is quite possibly top five best special effects in horror movies, and it's about an invading
and
alien.
Also in the top five, Invasion of the Saucer Men. So, perfect. The year is 1957. You're going to the drive-in, and you're seeing Invasion of the Saucer Men, but what do you think the A picture is that's playing before it?
The Peregrine Falcon.
Because I'll tell you this much, I've seen both of these movies, and I'm going to have a better time watching Invasion of the Saucer Men.
Ooh. They saved Hitler's brain. No, that was 60s.
Yeah, that was 60s. It was I Was a Teenage Werewolf, which has a fantastic werewolf design, and that is the end of the compliments.
that movie been is sitting in mess. My to-pick list, but I don't think I ever will.
It's better than half the shit that's on your list, dude. No one wants to listen to us talk about Strip Nude for Your Killer, okay? It's not happening.
Why are you going to jump to a conclusions that Strip Nude for Your Killer is a grindhouse movie?
Matt, what have you been watching, my friend?
So, for the Geekscape podcast, John, I was on it recently, and John messaged me the day of and said, hey, have you watched Luca yet? And I said, no. And he said, well, watch it before you go on the show today. So, I gave it a watch. And
be very careful, because I'm watching it in a day and you tend to spoil.
No, I'm not going to give any spoilers. I'm going to give some disappointing news. Probably one of my least favorite Pixar movies. And I think part of it is A, that I hold Pixar to such a high caliber that, like, you know, when I go into a movie like Coco or Onward, like, or Soul or Inside Out, like, these are movies that, like, have so many layers and are so deep and like hit all of these really interesting beats that are like far above like normal kids entertainment. This movie kind of felt more like a DreamWorks movie than a Pixar movie. In that sense, it's very just a kids movie for kids. And I also think the other factor is that Rey and the Last Dragon was just so good. It's fun. It's an enjoyable movie, but it's pretty low on my Pixar list for sure.
Why do you think that the anxiety and depression rate in teenagers has skyrocketed over the past 30 years?
Oh, probably because movies like Toy Story make you terrified that every toy that you've had secretly
exactly.
has a life.
So maybe Luke is what we need, right? Because Pixar, as enjoyable as they are, it's just like, wow, here's some really cute animals to teach you about despair. And sometimes we don't need that.
I'm going to be honest with you. I like your line of thought here and your reasoning, but I thought that my toys were alive back in 1985, so I can't put that blame on Pixar.
Prior to that, that was just your thoughts in your head. And then Pixar did Toy Story, and you're like, oh, God. Other people thought this. Now it must be true.
Dude, when I was like 8, I got up to pee in the middle of the night. And you know how like you're still like dreaming semi-awake? I went into the bathroom and I peed. And then when I came back in my room, my toys were like, shh, shh, shh. And then I was so convinced that I was like, I caught you. I fucking caught you.
That's a much better version of when I got up to pee and I was half asleep. And I sliced open my eyeball.
What?
Oh, God.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. That was gross. I do remember when I was working out late on a project. Oh, poor thing. I was working with Mom, and Julie came downstairs. And Mom was like, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm getting water. And then stepped on the chair, pulled her pants down, sat on my project, and then just started pissing. Like, straight out of The Exorcist.
Oh, Julie, I'm sorry. I'm glad you never hear this episode. I guess I can't just drop the one tidbit and not actually explain it for people. So when I was a kid, I got up one night to go to the bathroom, and we used to have this little plastic cup in the bathroom for, like, if you wanted a sip of water, like a cup of water in the middle of the night. So I went to get a cup of water afterwards, and I knocked over the cup, and someone had left the cabinet underneath the sink open, and I didn't see it. So when I bent down to get the cup, I jabbed my eye into the corner of the cabinet, and I was still, like, half asleep, so I didn't think anything of it, and just got my water and went back to sleep. And then when I woke up the next morning, I couldn't open my eye because I had actually punctured the eyeball, and it was, like, sealing itself over, and I basically had to wear an eye patch for a couple weeks while it healed.
I saw no third dimension.
Yeah. And now I wear, like, super thick glasses.
Let's not blame your stupidity for your astigmatism, all right? Anyway, you guys are downers. And I am going to be an upper today. So
yeah.
Megan and I started watching Game of Thrones. Finally started watching Game of Thrones. So for anybody that's not the top tier Patreon watching this, Brian has, and I think I've counted four times now, made the fucking cowabunga sign with his thumb and pinky out. And you live in Georgia, buddy. Like, maybe if you're in Florida and you could even surf. Anyway, so we started watching Game of Thrones. We're two episodes in. I don't even know if I'll make it through the first season before I get sick of everybody being a shithead. But the thing about Game of Thrones that I do enjoy is twofold. I enjoy the head trauma, because there's a lot of it already, mm-hmm. and boobs. I don't think that the gore and nudity is going to really keep me coming back forever. It's just it's something to fucking watch when Megan and I are like, well, there's no real show to watch this week. I guess we're going to watch there's no real show to watch on this day of the week, rather. So yeah. Let's just watch an episode of Game of Thrones.
That's why you guys hate my picks all the time.
Yeah, it's not Loki day, so.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't hate your picks, Brian, but what did you watch this week?
I didn't finish it, but I still want to talk about it because it was so entertaining. We like threw on a flat Earth documentary, and it got boring midway through. But like the best part was, so they had the science, like these guys that were like whatever scientists, I guess, and they were convinced that. They could prove, they're like, we know that the Earth is flat, and like they did all this thing, we're like, this is the proof, and they're like, if only we can get our hands on this $20,000 laser, like, it's never wrong, if we can get our hands on this $20,000 laser, it will prove that the Earth is not on a 15 degree axis, and then like, that's our first step in disproving it, right? Someone loans them the money, they buy a $20,000 laser, they put it on the ground, and it shows a 15-degree axis. And then they start to try to figure out where this laser that they just hyped up saying is never wrong could have went wrong. And it was so good.
That's called a sunk cost fallacy, listeners.
Holy shit. All right, well, that was Invasion of the Saucer Men 1957, as picked by me. Next week, we're diving into a 90s pick that Scott picked. And man, it gave me so much splendor to watch that I am so excited to record this. So tune in next week for more Horror Movie Night.
Listening to the Geekscape Network.
Hi, friends. The world got you down. Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made?
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscovered Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.